You're listening to WBH Radio. I'm your host, William Holly. Thanks for joining me on episode 23. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the YouTube channel, download the podcast, wherever podcasts are available, and follow me on Twitter at WBH Radio. Few things going on today. Got one of my boys coming through. He's going to get us ready for the NFL season, my man LaRon Blake. But first, I wanted to talk about the JBA. You guys familiar with that? That's the Junior Basketball Association. It was founded and spearheaded by LaVar Ball, the controversial, polarizing father of Lakers point guard Lonzo Ball. They just wrapped up their first season, played their championship last Sunday, August 12th, in California. And I thought we could just go over some things that took place this year. First, in December, LaVar Ball said, I want to build this platform. I want to give kids an opportunity to play professional basketball after high school, directly after high school. Because as we know, the NBA says you got to be a year removed from your graduating class. Ultimately, giving the NCAA kind of like a monopoly. Like, kids got nowhere to turn, so they just go to the NCAA. LaVar Ball said, no more of that. I'm going to give you an opportunity on American soil to play professional basketball. Ambitious, right? I know. But hey, the first piece to successful business is being able to fill a void. And there's definitely a void there, right? We would agree with that. So he said, I'm going to start this league. I'm going to pay these kids $3,000 a month. I'm going to give them an opportunity to earn commission on their jersey sales. So he reached out to some of the top high school prospects, the blue chip kids, and many of them turned them down. They said, no thanks, LaVar. I'm already committed to Duke. I'm already committed to North Carolina, UCLA. And I found that interesting because we all lament the fact that the NCAA doesn't pay these guys athletes. They have nowhere to turn. Here is LaVar Ball giving them an opportunity to earn a living. But they said no. I found that interesting, you know. But we can save that for another conversation for another day. So instead of grabbing the blue chip kids, LaVar Ball went into the inner cities and got the athletes that many people forgotten about. You know, to a man in the NBA, if you go to these guys in the league, and they will tell you about somebody from their community when they were growing up that was better than them, more talented than them. But for whatever reason, they weren't able to make it to the professional ranks. And LaVar Ball went and got those kids. You know, some of the stories of there was one kid who just couldn't finish high school because after his sister passed, he just couldn't focus. Right? So if you're not in that pipeline of high school star, turn college star, the NBA forgets about you. And your career is basically thwarted. You know, there's guys in high school who they were playing basketball, doing well, but hey, their girlfriend got pregnant. They had to quit, go find a job. Their mom got sick. They had to quit, find a job, raise their siblings. So this league is giving these athletes an opportunity to revitalize, giving them a platform to perform. And I thought that was spectacular. Those kids needed more than the blue chip guys that had all these scholarship offers. So that's how the league got kicked off, with that type of talent. And I thought that was a bonus, man. That's a plus to LaVar Ball. Kudos to him. Right, so the league is set to get underway. Right, the media knocked him because he didn't land the blue chip kids, but they're still moving forward. Now the games get underway. The attendance is not good at all. You know, they mocked him for that. He said, listen, man, with any league, any startup, there are going to be hurdles. You know, people are reluctant when something is new. They want to watch from afar at first. You know, in fact, I was thinking, too, how many of our favorite artists had to re-release their first album because fans slept on it? Fans didn't know how special it was. Right? I think it's no different with his league. And he also reminded folks, hey, it's not about the attendance. It's about the eye in the sky. Because they have a Facebook deal that broadcasts their games. They average 100,000 to 200,000 views. And when LaMelo, Angelo plays. His son, the starter league, they've been up to 800,000 views. He says, so don't scoff at that. That's eyeballs. That's money. So the league is chucking along, trugging along. And then there was an incident with a coach. A coach kind of roughed up a player during a timeout. You know, simply put, the coach was dead wrong. But it was funny to watch the coverage of it because everybody said, oh, LaVar Ball allows this coach to run rampant. LaVar Ball said, yo, the guy was wrong and we'll address it. But when the NCAA has coaches that are out of line, like Bobby Knight, like Frank Martin, those bad actions are independent and they stick to just the coach alone. It doesn't stick to NCAA president or NCAA brass. So how come when it happened in LaVar Ball's league, every article read LaVar Ball lets coach run wild? You would have to get damn near in the article three paragraphs before you even learn the coach's name. Another hurdle, but he kept on trucking. The league kept moving along. And last week, they played their playoffs. And what was special about the playoffs, my humble opinion, it kicked off at Cal State University in Los Angeles. Now, that school is where LaVar Ball, essentially, he was a scholarship athlete there, and he also met his wife. So years ago, you were just a kid yourself running around playing basketball, and now you return with your own league. Yo, that's phenomenal. Not only do you return with your own league, but you have two of your sons starring and playing in that league. Man, I liken that to what I saw from Ice Cube when he was producing the movie Straight Outta Compton. Here you are, your rap career begins, people think you're a menace to society. You know, you're in a group of niggas with an attitude. You have your running with the police. Fast forward, you graduate to being a movie producer and producing a movie that goes on to gross over $100 million. But not only that, but the star of the movie is your own offspring playing you. And that's coming full circle. That's getting it done. And I thought that was a phenomenal accomplishment for LaVar Ball and his family. And for the league, to see that thing come full circle, truly phenomenal. And then we get to the championship game. The Los Angeles team won. That team has both his sons on it, LiAngelo Ball and LaMelo Ball. And after the championship, I learned that everybody on that team, the 10 players plus the coaching staff, they each individually get a 2018 Cadillac ATS sedan. Hold up. Let me get this straight. Everybody on that squad got a car? Hell, if you win the NBA All-Star game, only one player gets a car. If you win the Super Bowl, only one player gets a car. But if you win the LaVar Ball League, you and your whole squad get whips? Ladies and gentlemen, that's getting it done. That's a phenomenal job. And with that alone, I got to consider that first year a success. Even with the mediocre ticket sales, even with the hiccup with the coach, those kids played a full season. They had an opportunity to earn some money, opportunity to raise their stock, and it was capped off with a phenomenal championship, and the team was rewarded with vehicles. For first year out the gate, man, I got to say that's a success. You know, and it doesn't stop there. LaVar Ball is going to take a team of the best players overseas to play in a European exposure tour. More opportunities for the kids to showcase their talents and earn a living. It was reported that during the season, a kid by the name of Kenzo Brown, he left the JBA to sign a professional contract in France midway through the season. That's what the league set out to do, and it seems to be accomplishing its goal. Now, was everything perfect? Of course not. People got on him for the attendance. People got on him for the coach he had in his ranks. And even most recently, there was a kid that came out and said, hey, I was cut during the league. I only received one-third of my pay. The league still owes me two-thirds. Now, I saw what the kid said on Twitter. He said, I'm not blaming it on LaVar Ball. I just said, hey, they might have forgotten about me. Well, this needs to be rectified. Right now, that's another reason the media wants to come raining down. And if LaVar Ball doesn't fulfill his word, he should be raked to the coals. He should have to answer for that. But the league season just ended a week ago. Give him time to settle those bills. But from my viewpoint, I got to say it's an abject success, a full-out success. It's your boy William Holly. You're listening to WBH Radio. I wanted to switch gears and talk about Mr. Terrell Owens. Terrell Owens is a wide receiver, former wide receiver in the National Football League. He was recently elected to the Hall of Fame class of 2018. Now, there's been a few stories coming out about this election for a number of reasons. For one, it took Terrell Owens three times to get into the Hall of Fame. Terrell was unhappy about it. He thought he was a first ballot Hall of Famer. And many former players believed he should have been in on the first time. And the rumblings and the stories that came out is that he wasn't elected in the first time around because he was a tough teammate to get along with. He disrupted locker rooms is what they said. Now, T.O. said, man, that's not fair. And to show his unhappiness with that decision, instead of attending the Hall of Fame presentation in Canton, Ohio, he said, yo, bump that, man. You dudes kept me out for years. I'm not showing up to your ceremony. I'm going to go do my own ceremony at the University of Chattanooga, Tennessee, where he went to college. Now, I'm like, damn, T.O., son. Like, I know what it is to want to thumb your nose at the establishment, to hold grudges. Trust me, I do. But I thought to T.O., I said, listen, man, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. The people you are mad at are the writers who elect the Hall of Fame class. Man, it's not even about them. Go celebrate with your fellow professional athletes, your colleagues, the guys you competed with. Just go celebrate with them. Forget the writers. But T.O. being stubborn and somebody that was standing on what he believed in, he went through with his ceremony at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. He didn't show up to Canton, Ohio. And when I saw the way the presentation turned out, I said, yo, good for T.O. That's spectacular. That's amazing. Celebrate with the people that were there before the lights and the cameras and the money. That's the school that took care of you. That's the people you cared about most. Go celebrate with them. That's amazing. Now, the Hall of Fame didn't want to acknowledge T.O. because he wasn't showing up to their ceremony. They didn't want to do a video montage. They said, yo, we'll mail him his jacket. That's it. I'm like, hold up, what? True story. If Terrell Owens was dead, they would acknowledge him at the Hall of Fame, at the ceremony. They would do a video montage. They would write his bio. They would tell stories. But since he's opting not to show up, they in turn are going to act petty as well and not acknowledge him. And I thought that was completely wrong. Whether you like the dude or not, he earned the opportunity to be in the Hall of Fame, pay him his respect, put his video up there, call his name the day of the ceremony. If he was in a freaking coma, you would. So I thought that was truly petty on the hands of the Hall of Fame establishment. But I wasn't surprised, Establishments like that, they don't like guys that color out of the lines. And T.O. is definitely one of those individuals. But what truly frustrates me is the backlash he's received from his fellow Hall of Famers. The guys he lined up with. Guys like Ray Lewis. Guys like Chris Carter and Michael Irvin. Back in 2017, Ray Lewis said, T.O. should just disappear from talking, and then maybe he'll get in the hall. Hold on. Isn't the Hall of Fame about what you did on the field? T.O.'s career is already cemented. No, whatever he says shouldn't affect whether he goes in or not. Because he pisses off a writer or not shouldn't affect if he goes in. And that's the principle T.O. is standing on. And it's disappointing that his fellow players are not backing him. Michael Irvin said it was selfish of him not to show up. Yo, you guys don't understand the principle. He's saying, listen, T.O. was saying, I lined up, I played the game the right way. Whether there was disputes with teammates, this or that, that happens to everybody and everywhere. In your office building is happening. In the military is happening. In corporate America is happening. Those disputes happen amongst teams. That doesn't take away from his talents and what he's accomplished. Hell, the commissioner of pro football, Roger Goodell. There's a former referee. His name is Mike Pereira. He wrote a book. He was the head of officiating for the NFL. So he was inside those offices. He wrote a book. And in the book, he said, at one of the corporate meetings, Roger Goodell, who was a young lawyer at that time, working with the NFL, he pushed Mike Pereira because they were having a dispute about something. So the man that presides over the whole professional sport was guilty of pushing one of his teammates and colleagues. Yet he gets to still hold his gig. So for you guys to hold whatever Terrell did in his career against him, that's wrong. And the writers shouldn't be able to do that. That's the principle T.O. was standing on. And he's standing on not just for him, but for fellow players and future players to come. Hey, the process is flawed. Only these writers get to vote on who gets in. And they get to bring in personal biases. They get to take into account hearsay. T.O. said, my numbers speak for themselves. That alone should get me in the hall. And guys like Ray Lewis say, yo, you need to be quiet. Michael Irvin said, you need to be hushed and maybe you could get in. They say T.O.'s not getting in because of character issues. Really? A Hall of Fame that still has O.J. Simpson's bust in it? A Hall of Fame that let Ray Lewis in, somebody who once stood on trial for murder? Michael Irvin, who had all type of drug charges during his playing career. Michael Irvin, who was accused of sexual assault as recently as December 2017. He's in. Randy Moss gets in on his first go-round. Randy Moss. Man, I never seen a player more gifted be accused of quitting more than Randy Moss. Accused of quitting. Randy Moss was accused by his own teammate. Shoot, he went to Oakland for 2 years, did absolutely nothing. In the prime of his career, before he went to Oakland, he had 17 touchdowns. He had 13 touchdowns. He gets to Oakland, only 8. The next year in Oakland, only 3. And the very next year after that, when he went to New England, he had 23 touchdowns. Now you think he just remembered how to play football again? No, he quit in Oakland. And that's the guy you let in on the first ballot? Meanwhile, T.O. is somebody who played in the Super Bowl 3 weeks after breaking his leg and grabbed 8 catches for over 120 yards. This the guy you want to keep out because of character issues? No drugs, no violence, no murder trials, nothing. T.O. is standing up for you guys. He's saying this process is flawed and we need to do something to fix it. Listen, I like to watch the show Undisputed. It's on Fox Sports, Skip Bayless, and it has Shannon Sharpe. Shannon Sharpe is one of the most entertaining people on TV. He does a great job talking about basketball, baseball, and the sport in which he played, football. Shannon Sharpe is able to talk about all of these different sports. And he's a Hall of Fame player in the game of football, and he doesn't have a say-so or who joins that hall or who gets nominated for that hall. And y'all don't have a problem with that? T.O. does. Shit, I do. Deion Primetime Sanders, you'd be hard-pressed to name a better footballer than him. He doesn't have a say-so on who gets in the hall? T.O. say, listen, guys, this ain't right. And none of his fellow colleagues, Hall of Famers, are backing him up. They just saying, hush, man, be quiet, and maybe they'll let you in. Chris Carter all on TV talking about, well, it took me 6 years to get in because you're not as good as T.O. That's not an explanation why T.O. should wait. Oh, it took me 6 years. Listen, T.O. got 2,000 more yards than you, 23 more touchdowns than you. You're giving the writers too much power, and this dynamic needs to change. And it just amazes me that these athletes are taking so much pride in this Hall of Fame. Like, yo, T.O. was disrespecting our house. I don't know about you, but I got to say so on what goes on in my house. What the decorations look like, who gets to come in and leave. Michael Irvin, Ray Lewis, Chris Carter, you guys take so much pride in this hall. You don't have any say so in that, son. And T.O. is exposing that. And nobody wants to back him up. Nobody wants to back him up, man. Congratulations to T.O. on getting the Hall of Fame. And to his other guys, y'all need to wake up. Listen, I don't really like to discuss things unless I feel I can add to the conversation. Right? I don't just want to echo things that we see on TV or just have the same old conversation. And that was true with the University of Maryland football death. Right, their offensive lineman, a kid by the name of Jordan McNair, passed away after collapsing during a football practice. Now, I don't have any answers, but I do have some more questions. I do have some questions. First and foremost, rest in peace to that young man, Jordan McNair. He was 19 years old, Maryland native. Just going to college, looking to play some football. You know, you finally from under your parents' rule. Has some groupie love, freaking fraternities. Like, who knows? He just had his whole life ahead of him, playing a game he loved, and unfortunately, he passed. Major tragedy. But what I think compounds the tragedy is after something like this happens, it turns into a witch hunt, and it turns into the blame game. Who can we blame for this young man's death? Now, that doesn't help prevent the next one from happening. That's really what I'm most concerned about. How do we prevent this from happening again? Right? And in this blame game, this witch hunt, of course, the culprit was the head coach. Head coach's name is DJ Durkin, head coach of the University of Maryland football. And after the young man passed, stories came out about it was a toxic environment. The coaches used profanity. They pushed the kids to the limit. Now, let's be 100%. Pushing kids to the limit, this type of coaching happens everywhere. College sports, pro sports, youth sports. If we're going to do something about it, let's do something on the front end. Right? Let's not wait until the results of a kid perishing to say, okay, now let's make a change. Because when Coach Mike Krzyzewski pushes kids to the limit and they win a national championship, we applaud it. Same with Nick Saban. Right? All the leadership I study, it's all about process over results. Let's not just wait till the results to say, oh, okay, bad actions. If his methods are bad, let's jump on it on the front end. Do you agree? Doesn't it make you uneasy that we judge things based on the result? Either the process was right or it wasn't. Shoot, because I know, you know, shout out to my coach Baker. We be around the youth. We be coaching them, pushing them in practice. We running suicides. We running sprints. Kids want to put their hands on their knees. Nah, man, stand up. No getting tired in a game. There's no getting tired in athletic competition. You got to persevere. And many a times that hard work is rewarded with wins in a basketball game, winning tournaments. The kids love it. The families love it. Everybody's having fun. Now, if we did those same actions and unfortunately a kid was to get really ill and ultimately pass on, that now makes me a villain? I don't know. I'm a little bit uneasy with that. You know, if you really believe the coach, if that method, that way of life is truly bad, and we know it's taking place all over college sports, let's do something on the front end. Right? So let's say you guys were able to get the coach out of here. You were able to get the coach fired. I still don't have the answer of how we prevent this from happening again. How do we prevent the next head coach from earning that spot and pushing the kids to the point where exhaustion was where they pass on? How do we prevent the strength and conditioning coach who many said was negligent, who didn't call the paramedics right away? How do we stop him from being licensed? Right? I think when people just jump in and they talk about getting individuals fired, that's kind of just a cover your ass mode. Oh, it was the coach, man. Got him out of here. Now my job is done. No. Because again, it doesn't do anything to prevent the next guy from passing. The next tragedy. And that's what really our concerns need to be.
You're listening to WBH Radio. I'm your host, William Holly. Yo, when I created this show, it came out of me getting tired of waiting for ESPN and Fox to come validate my experiences and my studies. I said, forget it. I'm going to crown myself king. And I wanted to do the same for the people I was studying with and working with. I thought I was around some spectacular young people doing great things. And if nobody else was going to highlight them, I was going to do so. And one of those spectacular young men I was working with, studying with, is my man, LaRon Blake. Blake!
Yo.
What up, man? Welcome to the show, man. You got to talk to the mic.
Yo,
talk to the mic,
good,
brother.
Good?
It's been a long time, man.
Yo, it's been mad long. How you been?
I'm chilling, man. I want to run through your resume real quick. You and I were together at the Brooklyn College Sports Management Program graduate degree, right?
Yep.
Where'd you go to undergrad?
I went to SUNY Cortland. I graduated SUNY Cortland around 2013. And right after that, I started teaching. Like, right after. It was like 3 weeks. I started teaching in Brownsville.
Okay, so you're currently working in the public school system, right?
Yeah.
Now, hold on. I said we went to graduate school at Brooklyn College. You did another graduate degree, didn't you?
Yeah, I got two master's degrees, actually. I was doing them at the same time.
Dang, bro.
Same time.
You working hard, man. I got to step my game up.
Yo.
Now, when you were at Cortland undergrad, did you take part in any extracurricular activities?
Yeah, I played football. I actually played football there. I played receiver. I walked on in the spring. They took me. I played there for 3 years. Everything. It was great, man.
How was that?
Yo, college football is fun. You know, my playing time was up and down, but I had a great time.
The girl showed y'all love?
Of course. Of course. Is that even a question?
I told you, this is my man. He's doing his thing. College athlete. Did the academics, 2 master's degree. Currently working in the public school system.
Yeah.
And not only were you an athlete, but you passing on that out to the kids now. You're currently coaching as well, right?
Coaching. I'm coaching like 7 different sports right now.
Tell me, give me the rundown. Run through it.
All right, here we go. So I got, right now, currently I'm coaching flag football at my middle school, and I'm also coaching tackle football at Stuyvesant High School. So right now, we're in season.
All right, man. Sounds like I got the right dude for the job, man. I want to run through some of this NFL stuff, help me figure out some things. Listen, how old are you?
29.
You're 29. Okay, I'm a little bit older than you.
All right.
33 years old. When I came up watching sports, watching the NFL,
The running back was a big part of what was going on the NFL team.
Absolutely.
I'm talking about Emmitt Smith of the Dallas Cowboys, Terrell Davis, Denver Broncos, Barry Sanders, Detroit Lions, Curtis Martin, Jerome the Bus, Eddie George, right? So the running back was a big part of things. Then the NFL seemed to get away from that. They try to act like the running back is replaceable. You know, you got guys like Alvin Kamara. We'll wait to the second round to draft him. Or David Johnson. We'll wait for the second round to draft him. So I'm like, dang, what happened to the running back position? And then this dude Saquon Barkley comes on.
Oh, man.
And they tell me he's the best thing since pants with pockets. So I'm confused. I don't know what to think, man. How should the NFL, how should New York feel about Saquon Barkley in the Giants jersey?
Listen, I wanted the Giants to go. At the last game of the season when they was playing and the Colts was playing at the same time, I was like, listen, please let the Colts win so the Giants can get the number two pick just to get Saquon Barkley. He's that good. That dude is that good.
Yo,
I'm telling you right now.
Yo, you played the, so help me understand what I don't see anything different
than see special? You don't see anything special?
Nah, help me. What do you see?
Listen. The first game I actually watched him play is he played against Michigan. When he was playing against Michigan, Penn State, he had 3 carries, 2 touchdowns, and 89 yards.
Right.
Scored 2 touchdowns on 3 carries. I'm telling you, he's like Le'Veon Bell.
Okay.
But he's bigger and stronger.
They always talk about the vision. How important is that for the running back?
Listen, so when I played in high school, vision was the most important. Like, pretty much, if your O-line can't block, you better find a hole.
Right.
I'm telling you, Saquon, he got agility, and that helps with his vision because he can actually cut through the holes, he can get through it, and his speed. So he's able to get through the hole and run. But his vision, I don't know. It's really like eye touch.
That's his superior skill? Just the vision to be able to find holes that his line is not creating, just to find little gaps and exploit them?
I think what makes him great is he's elite in every aspect of being a running back. Mm. It's mind-blowing. He's huge.
He's
230. He's 5'11", 230. Then he's running a 4.3. 4-4. Rich, his legs. They call him Saquads on his team.
Yo, like, so your excitement is telling me that he's kind of a can't miss prospect.
I'm so happy that he was drafted to the Giants.
Yo,
that's how happy I am. I'm a Giants fan, and I'm not even trying to be funny. I was like, the Browns should have drafted him first.
Like that.
Yeah, the Browns should have drafted him.
Right. Okay. So Saquon Barkley was drafted number 2, right?
Number 2.
The number 3 pick was Sam Darnold, another player. He's a quarterback for the New York Jets. Another player that New York City is excited about.
Yeah.
Right. Josh Norman, a cornerback for the Redskins, somebody who doesn't really pass out praise, said the kid he doesn't rattle easy. He's on point. So, the New York Giants. You know, we love Eli. He gave 2 championships, Eli. But he's getting up there in age.
Elite.
Will the Giants regret passing up on a quarterback like Sam Darnold, who many believe is going to be good for the next 10 years, to get the running back Saquon Barkley? I mean, how long do the Giants believe they can pair Saquon to Eli?
Listen, here's my theory on it. There's going to be another quarterback that comes out that's just elite. And Sam Darnold, like, he's good, but I don't even think he's the best quarterback. I don't even think he's the best quarterback in this class. I think Baker Mayfield was the best quarterback. I really, truly do. And I did not want Sam Darnold. I did not want him. And the reason I say that is because, first of all, quarterbacks coming from USC have not been well. Have not done well. Got Mark Sanchez.
Right.
And Matt Leinart.
Kind of 0-2, right?
0-2. Now, Mark Sanchez did the AFC title game twice.
Right.
But now what?
It's a quarterback league, LeRon.
I feel you.
You know,
I'm telling you, everybody,
they said Sam Darnold's the goods. The way you were talking about Saquon Barkley. So, I don't know. I thought it was a bit negligent to pass up on the quarterback and get the running back.
I don't agree. You see Zeke?
Yes.
Zeke is doing his thing for Dallas. Zeke scares teams because he's that good.
And I need you to help me with that also, because people always tell me, yeah, Zeke, but it's his O-line. So, I don't know what to think.
Nah, Zeke is a different animal. Zeke is one of those elite running backs also. And the league right now, it's moving. You gotta have playmakers.
Right.
You gotta have playmakers for these quarterbacks. These defensive D linemen are blazing fast now. These D linemen, strong, fast, they get to the quarterback instantly. You need playmakers. And Zeke and Ty Gurley, those type of running backs, they can catch the ball out the backfield.
Why do you think running backs have been devalued as of late? As I told you, I came up in the era of the 90s, golden age of the running back. These guys got top billing. Now teams are like, maybe we'll get one in the sixth round. Why do you think there's been such a step back for that position?
It's because now teams are looking for two, because they see that wear and tear has been taking, like, killing running backs.
Right.
You know, you had LT. You know, that was, like, probably, like, that was a real workhorse.
With LaDainian Thompson.
LT. Right. Yeah, LaDainian Thompson. And once he started getting banged up, they seen that he was, like, slowing down. So now teams are looking for two running backs. They need two, or they want running backs that can fit in a system. So everything is about the system. They're really looking for two. Some coaches are like that. Some coaches want that three down back, like a Saquon. They want that Ty Gurley. But those are there's a few of those. Because a lot of coaches in college now, they got two backs. Look at Georgia. Look at Alabama. Look at those schools. Those schools that produce NFL caliber players. They run systems with two running backs. One fast one, one strong one. All run. Like the Giants back in the day when they had Brandon Jacobs and Amon Bradshaw.
Right.
So they looking for it's really the system. Like, systems are changing where they put in faster running backs who can catch. That whole running backs who can't catch no more, those are your first and second down.
Okay.
But then when you put that running back who can catch the ball in, the defense can know.
All right, man. LaRon Blake says Saquon Barkley is the goods, man. I just didn't know what to make of it. I want to go to another Giants playmaker.
Okay.
Odell Beckham Jr., the colorful Odell Beckham Jr. I want to ask you, as a Giants fan, because it's coming up. He's looking for the biggest contract in NFL history. He definitely wants to be the highest paid receiver. As a fan, do you think the organization should give him the money? Because, I don't know, for me, just looking from the sideline, I would be weary. You know, sometimes I think he's in love with celebrity more than the game. So, give me your take.
You know, honestly, Odell is probably top three receivers in the league.
Right, for sure.
Hands down. You got Antonio, you got Julio, and you got Odell. You can't go wrong with any of those three. He does bring that baggage. He does bring that celebrity. He wants to be a celebrity. But I truly believe that he really cares about football. The way he handles his on the field, he can get a little crazy, but I think he does that because he really loves the game.
Yo, listen, I think he's a talent as well. I really have no problem with his antics. Like, guys get a little testy, competitive on the field. I had no problem with that. Right. My one problem with him was, a few years ago, we about to play the biggest game of the season.
Oh, yeah, the playoffs.
And you got to fly to Miami and take pictures with Trey Songz on the boat. Bro, we got the whole off season for that.
Yeah, he messed up.
I was unhappy with that decision, man. As a fan, were you pissed off? Well, you and your dad, now, Giants fans.
The only reason he pissed off is because he dropped that touchdown. The only reason. If he caught that touchdown, we won that game, nobody would care about that boat.
Right.
Nobody would care. But he didn't play well in that playoff game. So now everybody's saying he was distracted by the life.
Right.
Sorry for him?
Yeah.
Do I give him the money? Kind of have to. First of all, he brings fans.
Okay.
He brings fans. He brings money to the building. People come to see him.
Yes.
People come to see him. There's nothing you can do about that. He's bringing money. He deserves it. You got Brandon Cooks making $80 million. Like, something crazy like that.
Right. Now, I want to go organization part, because I don't know if you knew that I worked with the Yankees. Okay. You know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, man, I'm trying. Okay. Organizations have their own fears, their own responsibilities as well. It came out recently. He had that video with the girls.
I saw that.
People believe he was around some coke. Like, bro, if I'm going to hand you $100 million, I need to know that you're all in from an organization's perspective. So can you at least understand people being skeptical? And absolutely. Also, how can you be the paid as the best wide receiver when there's a Julio Jones around, when there's an Antonio Brown around?
Well, I feel bad for Antonio and Julio because they didn't do their contracts this year.
Right.
Odell's going to set up, like, Odell's going to set a precedent. He's going to set, they're going to pay him the highest amount. They kind of have to because he's top three. But after his contract, then you're going to see Antonio get more.
Right.
And you're going to see Julio get more. Julio already held out for a day, and the Atlanta Falcons were scared.
Right.
They was like, we're going to give him some extra money.
You're absolutely right. That boy's a monster. Now, I want to ask you this. Somebody that's been around the game, somebody that's coached at the youth level, been around teams, different sports.
Mm-hmm.
Talent is one thing, right? And yeah. Odell is a mega talent. But I need to see that coupled with work ethic. You know, Michael Jordan is not the greatest shooter in NBA history. He's not the greatest ball handler. He's not the greatest anything. But he's recognized as the greatest because of the work ethic.
Yeah.
Odell got that work ethic?
He do. He works hard in practice.
It's not just talent.
He works hard. That boy works hard, man. I agree. Listen, I've never met the man.
Right.
I've seen him in practice. I've seen him play.
Right.
I've seen him play. I went to a couple of Giants games. I saw him when he played against the Bengals, caught that TD
right.
on Monday night. Listen, from what I see, it seems like I haven't heard anything about his work ethic. I haven't heard anything bad about his work ethic.
Okay.
Reading up on the Giants, reading up on Twitter, all that.
Right.
I haven't heard anything about them saying that he is a horrible worker.
Okay.
I haven't heard anything.
Okay.
The only thing you hear is the off field stuff. But the money, it might slow him down.
Got you.
It might make him grow up a little bit. Cause now you can put stuff in that contract. Listen,
right.
you get caught up again, you gotta pay us back some money.
Right.
I don't know.
And the off field stuff, it wasn't even major. Celebrity pictures. I mean,
listen, that catch put him on the map instantly.
Instantly.
And that probably was like a curse,
right?
Like real low key that he made that catch. Now he's on TV.
Yeah, I just want stuff. You can never lose track of why you're in the building for being a football player and winning. Tom Brady don't chase celebrity. We just looked and saw this month had all these Super Bowls, and that's how you in turn become a celebrity.
No,
just chase being the greatest, and all that other stuff will come.
Young, gotta learn, man.
We gotta learn, man. But I want to ask you about another playmaker, and that's Dez Bryant.
Okay.
Dez Bryant, played for the Cowboys. He got cut.
Monster.
Not the Browns. Played for the Cowboys, got cut.
Mm-hmm.
The Ravens offered him a 2-year deal. He said, no thanks. Now, many believed he was hell-bent on playing in the NFC East. He wanted to get back at the Cowboys. I thought that was a mistake. Like, yo, Dez, just get your coins and be the best version of yourself. Then things slowed up, right? No, his phone wasn't ringing. Then we learned that the Cleveland Browns were reaching out to him, trying to bring him in. He didn't even respond or answer their calls, what we saw on Twitter. Last week, it turns out that he did finally visit the Browns. Yo, what's going to become of Dez?
First of all, Dez Bryant should have took that Ravens contract.
He should have.
He should have definitely took that
for
Ravens
sure.
contract. I think that would have been a perfect fit for him. The Ravens have a great defense.
Right.
They need playmakers on the outside.
Right.
They have no playmakers on the outside. I mean, I don't know if Mike Wallace is on the team. But they have no – Dez Bryant would have been a perfect fit for that team. Now, Dez was looking at it like, listen, I'm going to take a 1-year deal, kill,
show
and
you
then
who
get this 4-year, 5-year contract to get his money up.
Right.
He's taking a gamble. So now the Browns is calling him.
Right.
You know, you watch Hard Knocks. It looks like they need one more playmaker if they get a Dez. They got Josh Gordon. They got Landry, who's another beast. That's a baller.
Okay.
That kid ball. He's one of the receivers. Got Tyrod Taylor. He'll help that team out. I believe he can help the Browns. I really do. But I really truly
think if it's not the Browns, is that the end of the road for Dez? Because my thing is this. Dez, he has a reputation as being a malcontent. But I believe they will deal with you as long as your skills warrant the headache, right? Okay. So for the Dallas Cowboys to cut him, that let me believe they think he don't have it anymore.
It's Dak. They wanted to protect Dak.
And from my
quarterback league,
you know, from my vantage point, not being as experienced in the sport as you, it looked like Dez could barely separate from a defender.
But that's not really his game. Dez is a go-getter. Dez is one of those receivers. Dez is similar to how Julio is. Similar. Julio is a different animal. I'm saying similar for a reason. He's right. A different animal. Dez is a go-getter. Dez can go get the football.
So even if a defender is draped on him, he can still catch it at the hop with his hands.
Oh, but Dak didn't really trust that. Okay. Tony Romo did. So that's why he was so successful with Tony Romo. He said Dez was saying that he was hurt on Twitter. I saw it on Twitter. He said his foot was hurt. I don't know. I don't know him. But what I'm saying is from what I've seen from Dez, Dez was a go-getter. He'd go up and get the ball. He needs a quarterback who was willing to trust him to go up and get it.
Right.
That's why he kind of should have took that Ravens out. You got Joe Flacco.
Right.
Joe Flacco will throw the ball up for you. He's looking at the Browns. You know, you got Tyrod. Tyrod don't really gamble that much. I don't know. It looks like a good fit for him. But I think the thing with Dez is he needs a quarterback that can put the ball where he's going to be successful. Okay. And that's the jump balls.
Right.
Dez is a jump ball receiver. Strong. Physical, that's the type of receiver. He's not a separate, like, cut off a break and he's beating you with speed.
Right.
So he's a big receiver. I think Dez is, what, 6'2"?
Yeah. But that league, man, is cutthroat. Dez to be in his 20s, the season is about to kick off, and he hasn't been in camp. He's not on the roster. That's sad.
Yeah, it is.
And I think he's partially to blame, but – I mean, what else can you do? The Browns were calling you. You acknowledged on Twitter. You haven't answered them. I mean, I don't know what else to make of Dez.
I don't really see another team picking him up. I really don't, unless there's a serious injury. But I can't really think of another team. I mean, like the Patriots.
That would be unfortunate. Yeah, the Patriots helped revitalize a lot of careers. But you said, as far as skill and talent-wise, he's not done.
No. Nah, Dez got he has juice. He has juice. Like, all right, I'm telling
man.
You.
I don't know. For me, I ain't see he wasn't separating. Oh, I know Josh Norman called him out. But Le'Ron Blake. So we got Le'Ron Blake on the hook for Saquon Barkley. Odell Beckham give him his money. And Dez is still somebody that could contribute to this league. Now, I want to ask you about this helmet rule that has been making news. The NFL enacted a new rule. Let's see. Richard Sherman of the 49ers said, "The rule is idiotic," and he said it's going to be impossible to do. Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer said, "Yo, this rule will cost people their jobs," right?
Yeah, right?
The rule says, let's read it. "It is a foul if a player lowers head to initiate and make contact with his helmet against an opponent. That's for offensive players and defensive players." Now, reading that, visualizing it, seems like every play on football – known my whole life.
Puts their head down.
When you tackle, you put your head down. When you're rushing, you're trying to roll over an opponent, you put your head down.
Mm-hmm.
So, Blake, how's it going to go with this new rule? Is football the way we know it? Is it over?
No. First of
all,
everybody who's tripping needs to stop.
Needs to stop.
It needs to stop because, it's preseason.
Okay.
They're overthrowing the flags so they can gather information so when it really happens in the game, they know what to look for.
Okay, so they've been penalizing teams.
I'm telling you right now, the league knows they're not going to call as much as they have been now.
Right.
Without a doubt. Because it's going to slow the game down. It's going to make it difficult. Now, the reason they're putting the rule in is because they want people to be more conscious about putting their head down.
Okay.
They want to stop that second tackle. They want to stop that second somebody holding them up and then somebody coming and ramming that person. Or that coming across the middle, they want to and ramming the head. They want to stop the running backs putting their head down,
right,
going through other people, which is again taught from back in the day. But
right.
Now times has changed. I coach high school football.
Yes,
we can't teach kids to put their head down. A lot of the people coming into the league now, they already know that.
Okay.
So a lot of the tackles that they make, they don't put their head down because that's something that's been outlawed for a while in college football and in high school.
Yes.
We teach the rugby, like the rugby style tackling. Tackle on the side, with your head up, see what you're tackling, and roll. Tackle and roll. Tackle on the same side, roll. Before it was across the Before it was across the body, or put your head down.
Yes.
That's for years that has been taken out of football. So the rule has been put in. They're over flagging it now, but it is. I'm telling you right now, they're not going to be calling as much as you think.
LeRon, Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer, somebody that's been around the game for a long time, he said it's going to cost people jobs making these calls, asking players to make these adjustments after they've been playing football a certain way for 20 years.
Times has changed. He's going to have to make an adjustment. These coaches and these players are going to have to make a judgment. These are considered the best athletes in the world. Some of the best athletes in the world. You got to learn how to make an adjustment.
Right.
Some players are not going to be able to change. Don't get me wrong. But as years go on, you're going to see, I'm telling you, you're going to see less and less of these being called because the way that they're being coached now. Times have changed.
And, you know, I find it hypocritical that players, they were frustrated with the league because they felt the league didn't care about them. Mm-hmm. They sued the league for all these concussion lawsuits.
Yeah.
And trying to get money on the back end when they retired to pay for medical bills, as they should.
Yeah, agreed.
But here's the league stepping up, trying to make the game safer,
mm-hmm.
and stars like Richard Sherman are calling it idiotic. Like, which one do you want?
You bring up a good point.
Right.
You bring up a good point.
Yeah, I'm good for those every now and again.
But he. Listen, Richard Sherman, he played corner.
Right.
When is he really going to be tackled? He's not. First of all, he's not tackling everybody that comes across. Okay. He's going for the legs. He's going down. It's not. He's not out here making big hits. He's not spraying. That's not even his type of game.
Right.
So, yeah, the rule can seem idiotic, but it's rarely going to happen. The league is really trying to take away that extra player coming in and trying to ram people down.
Right.
That's really what it is.
And I know the league was said that they've been motivated by the Ryan Shazier tackle and incident last year when he came in and he had a spinal injury after he lowered his head and tackled somebody. So they're trying to clean up the game. Now, moving forward, 2018 season. I want you to tell me about what storylines are you looking forward to following? Which teams, which players, what should we be paying attention to?
Deshaun Watson.
Quarterback for the Houston Texans.
That boy, he's something special, man. He's a Russell Wilson like. Russell Wilson came and put the league on watch.
Right.
He came here and he was like, I'm taking it. Deshaun Watson.
He tore his Achilles last year, right?
No, it was his ACL.
Is he back? Has he been participating in training?
Yeah, he's been back. He's been, I think it was like week 7, but I think he had like the best passer rating during that time when he started the game before he got hurt or as a rookie, something like that. I don't know. I got to check my facts.
Deshaun Watson, I'm glad you bring that up because I always marvel at Deshaun Watson. He played at Clemson. He won a national title. Mm-hmm. He beat Nick Saban.
Twice.
He's riding high. And then when it comes time to draft these guys, the same with Cam Newton, the experts say, well, we don't know. Hold on. I just watched him win your college championship. I just watched him beat the greatest coach you say in Nick Saban.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're not sure if he's a player or not. So I'm always questioning, what am I watching with college football?
They say it's the system. They say that the reason that these quarterbacks are successful is for the system, not because of their talent.
Right.
You know, Deshaun Watson – the next player I compare him to is Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson, and when I watched college football, when I was watching him at was it Nebraska? No, it wasn't Nebraska.
North Carolina State or Wisconsin?
It was Wisconsin.
Yeah,
he was legit, and I always thought he was legit too. I was like, yo, who is this?
Right.
Like, who is this quarterback right now? When he came into the league. When I saw him playing on the Seahawks, I'm like, yeah, this guy's a good. Deshaun Watson gives me that feeling. And I think that a lot of GMs and stuff in the NFL are looking for a player who fits their mold as what a quarterback looks like.
Right.
And we all know what that means. They're looking for a quarterback that stays in the pocket and tall and smart and stuff. Like, it's ridiculous. And Deshaun Watson, he's not the prototypical size of the quarterback.
Right.
But that boy, he wins.
Yes.
He wins. And you can't take that for granted. You can't take that for granted. So I'm really eager to see how he do this season.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm just always amazed. Like, even Cam Newton. Cam Newton went undefeated, won a national championship. And when it comes time to draft him, they not sure if he should go number one.
Cam Newton, I'm 6'1".
Like, it should be in the bag, right? But I want to ask you, were you paying attention to the Terrell Owens Hall of Fame induction?
Hold
on. T.O., let's real quick. Let's break it up. T.O. didn't go in until his third ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Were they right or wrong for doing that?
Wrong. Without a doubt.
Why?
Top three receivers ever.
Why did they keep him out? Chris Carter would say, hey, they made me wait 6 times.
Terrell Owens he's number 3 in touchdowns.
Right.
Number 2 in yards. Receptions? Number 2 in receptions, I want to say. And number 2 in yards.
So
behind Jerry Rice.
The story is that he was kept out because he was tough to deal with in locker rooms. To that, you say what?
That's not what the Hall of Fame is about. The Hall of Fame is about stats.
Okay.
He was top 3 receivers ever. Ever. Chris Carter had to wait 6 years. T.O. was the top 3 in every category. Randy Moss and Jerry Rice.
T.O. opted to do his own ceremony at his former college, University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. What do you think about that? Should he have attended the ceremony? A lot of Hall of Famers were like, yo, that's selfish, T.O., man. Come celebrate with your guys.
He looks petty. He looks petty. He looks like...
I loved it.
You think so?
Hell yeah, man. Y'all want to keep me out? Yeah, y'all want to keep me out? I'm not going to show up. I'm thumbing my nose at the establishment.
He looked petty. I get what he was doing. I get why he did it. I get that, you know, he didn't like the way that they... He didn't like the fact that he had to wait till the third year to get in, because based off his antics, not his stats. I get it all, but that moment won't come again.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like, you know, he made his own decision, but I think he should have went. I get why he did it, and I don't fault him for that, but I think he should have.
Gotcha. One last thing I got for you before we get out of here.
All right.
University of Maryland football. Recently, they had a player pass away. Ultimately, came out because of a heat stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Rest in peace to Jordan McNair, for sure. Jordan McNair. Yeah. Now, when these things happen, I say, here comes the winch hunt. They try to point the finger. But what I'm more concerned is preventing this from happening again. Now, I think that's just football culture, mm-hmm. but that's athletic culture. We push kids to the brink, trying to get them to be the best version of themselves.
Yep.
It's just unfortunate that this kid had to pass. I don't necessarily think that means that his coaching staff is a villain or they didn't care about him. So you, somebody that plays athletics, somebody that has studied kinesiology, somebody mm-hmm. that is now coaching at the youth level, was this tragedy avoidable?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was avoidable. It's a fine line that you cross when it's you're dealing with a kid who died on because of what they were doing on your field.
Okay, now to me, I would say, isn't that taking place across fields all over the city, the country? Aren't we pushing the kids? Yo, push a little harder. That's how you become tougher, stronger. That's how you accomplish things.
And it's a fine line.
Right.
It's a fine line. But what's more important? That last sprint is more important. Or that kid, you see that kid, you've been taught all these years about coaching.
Right.
You see these kids. You can tell when the kid can't go no more. You really can.
I think that's the part, Blake. How do we identify that line so we can prevent? How do we train the upcoming coaches? How do we train the upcoming physical fitness staff to identify that line?
Yeah, it's...
You just know.
I've coached youth sports for about 8 years. Mm-hmm. You can tell when a kid can't go no more.
Right.
You really can. And is that extra sprint gonna, is that, that's gonna make him better? Is that extra sprint gonna really truly make him better?
Okay.
Is it, because when we do football camps and stuff like that, we know we do, in camp, we do something called hills. You have the kids run hills.
Yes.
As it's like a way of passage. Now, I coach at Stuyvesant. These kids are, you know, they athletic, but maybe not the most athletic kids. Some of these kids, you could when a kid is, you can tell when a kid can't, is not pushing himself.
Okay.
You can tell when a kid is really trying to push himself and can't make it.
Right.
You, when you coach, when you have played or when you've coached, you kind of just know. Gotcha. Like that kid, you know those kids. You know who's, who works hard. You know who plays around. You know who can't really handle it. You know who can handle it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know. That kid, he plays online, correct?
Yeah, he was all
he died
line.
During a conditioning test. 10 110-yard sprints. 10 110-yard sprints. I play receiver. Now, that's something that we're going to do, that we do in the game. In game. An old lineman is not running 10 110-yard sprints.
Mm.
In blazing heat like that. Yeah, they old linemen got to grind. They got to grind 15 play drives and stuff like that. 6 seconds. Honestly, football lasts about 6 seconds. Every play lasts about 6 seconds. So there's other ways to test a conditioning of an old lineman,
right,
or a D lineman.
So that young boy was out there running receiver drills.
He was running his conditioning test. From what I read, he was running his conditioning test. He had to do complete 10 110-yard sprints.
Mm-hmm.
When is an old lineman doing that?
Wow. See, that's something I wouldn't pick up, just not somebody that never played the sport. Wow, that's an interesting take.
When is he doing that?
You're absolutely right. Now that you explain it that way, old linemen, they push for 5 yards.
They push 5 yards, maybe if they get a screen, then they're running 70 right. yards, but the touchdown. What are you doing after you score the touchdown? You're sitting down for 2 minutes, three minutes. Maybe maybe you get a turnover, then you're going back out.
Right. Wow, see?
You're not doing that. If you're not doing that, you're not doing that.
Right.
So why are you testing at something that you're not going to do? In the blazing, you're Maryland. I know it's burning hot.
Got you. Wow, that's a unique perspective. See, that's why I got that's, you here,
yo,
man.
Thank, man. Listen, but they say that now there was a culture of bullying, they're bullying, the culture is bullying.
Right.
That can't happen. I understand tough. Listen, when I'm coaching, I'm as intense as you can get. But bullying is not the way. You can't bully these kids and scare these kids where they feel like they have to, if they don't do it like that, life depends, like their life, it's over.
Right.
They got to be able to, you got to have some type of sense like, oh, that's my child also. Because that's what coaches say when they recruit.
Right.
I'm gonna treat this kid like it's my child.
Right. You go into families' kitchens and ask for their son.
Yo, and daughter. I'm gonna treat him like it's my kid. You see your kid dying out there, you gonna just keep yelling at him and force him to do it so he can stay on the team? It's not right.
That ain't it, man.
I mean, it was tough. That's tough. I see it from both ways, but there had to be something going on. And maybe the head coach didn't really have nothing to do with it.
Right.
He gotta go.
He's the one that's overseeing everything.
He's seeing everything. He gotta go.
Yo, my man, LaRon Blake. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, man.
That's WBH Radio. We out.